All right. Welcome to our show, Fred. How are you today?
Thank you. I'm doing good.
Oh,
good to be
great.
With you.
Good, good. Well, thanks so much for being here. We're talking about your new book, Teaching the Pig to Dance, a memoir of growing up and second chances. It's a lot of fun, but one of the most remarkable observations that I found in your memoir was that you said your mom and dad taught you that children are shaped by the love and also by the support that the children themselves take for granted. Tell me a little bit, how did your parents and your grandparents shape your life?
Yeah, well, they were just there. You know, it's the good part of life, as they say, just showing up. And I do say that kids are formed by what they are able to take for granted. In my case, it was showing up 6 o'clock at night. My daddy would come in the door, and my mama would be sitting at the table. I knew he was going to be there. I knew there was not going to be any difficulties in my home. My folks weren't going to be arguing with me. There'd be a roof over my head and the simple things in life, but what a lot of kids don't have. I knew that if I got in trouble, I'd be in trouble at home, but if I got in too bad of trouble, my folks would support me and back me up and not make sure I didn't get too down about it. And it's just the simple stuff. It's so important to a kid growing up.
Absolutely. It's remarkable how much children need that routine, that sense of security to make their lives better. All right. Now, you were not, as you say in the book, you weren't the strongest of students, but you returned, you got your law degree.
That's a fair assessment.
And what's that? That's not a fair assessment?
I think that is a fair assessment.
Oh, all right.
A gross understatement. I was terrible.
Oh, now I don't know if that's exactly true. You've gone on. This is why the book is called A Memoir of Growing Up and Second Chances. You did have some wonderful second chances in your life. But, you said as a student growing up, you weren't that great. However, you went on, you got your law degree. And that was probably one of those second chances that you were talking about. But one of your most famous cases, and the one that I really took note of, was the one that you called the Marie trial. And that's what led you to acting. Do you mind going through how that led you to your acting career?
Yeah, it's like a lot of things, important things in my life that happened. It was totally by happenstance. It's nothing that I planned on, but it was after Watergate. I came back home. I opened up a little law practice. A young woman came to see me who had watched me on the Watergate hearings, and she said, "I'm chairman of the parole board here in Tennessee, but I don't like some of the things going on there." And to make a long story short, she was working for a governor, turned out to be corrupt. They were selling pardons and paroles out of the governor's office and putting pressure on her to deliver. And she was a whistleblower, and they fired her, and we sued the governor and had a kind of a celebrated case there in Tennessee. And the governor wound up going to jail. This legal counsel and others went to jail before it was all over with. And she was quite a heroine, and they made a movie about her and our case. And I wound up playing myself in the movie. I'd never been in a high school play, but they came to Kent Town to meet some of the real players in this saga, and I took it on, and wound up doing about 18 feature films before I quit to run for the Senate.
Well, and I want to talk to you about those feature films if our time permits, but let's talk about your most important role, and that was the one that you just alluded to. You served this country as a U.S. Senator from the state of Tennessee for 8 years, and I'd be remiss if I didn't say thank you for your service.
Well, thank you.
What made you take the plunge into politics, Fred?
I'd always been interested in politics around the kitchen table and all. My dad ran for county sheriff once, and I was steeped in it in my little town I grew up in. The politicians would come through and all. But as an adult, I became more and more concerned about the direction our country was going in, and felt that it would be good for people who could to take a portion of their life and give something back. And I decided that the Senate was the only thing I was ever interested in terms of an office, so I kind of started at the top, you might say, in terms of elective office, and ran for the Senate, and started way behind, and wound up with an election night victory. And I took the two remaining years of Al Gore's term when he ran for vice president, and then I ran for a full term at the end of that for 8 years altogether.
So, and looking back on your career in the U.S. Senate, in what ways did you make an impact?
Well, we were able to balance the budget for some years in a row there.
It was huge.
Seems like a long time ago now. We were able to change our welfare system we had in this country that had gotten worse and worse over a couple of decades, and start to rebuild our military again after some neglect after the end of the Cold War. So we accomplished some things there during the 8 years I was there.
Absolutely. Now, you also serve, I'm going to deviate just a little bit, because you serve on as the chairman of the International Security Advisory Board for the United States.
I did. Not anymore, but I was chairman of it, yeah.
Yeah. And what would you say, looking at the United States today, what would you say the state of our readiness and our intelligence is today?
Well, not as good as it should be. It's not something that can ever be perfect. But I think that we've made some headway. We've made some progress. I think we're in better shape than we were on 9/11, for sure. But the threats keep expanding. Everything from nuclear powers to rogue nations to individual terrorists and different kind of circumstances the country has ever faced before. And we've got to be better and more resolute than we've ever been before. And we've got some gaps in it, but we just have to stay on it all the time.
Good. I appreciate that. I want to talk about your career in acting, if I can, for just a minute. I remember first seeing you act as the Fleet Admiral in The Hunt for Red October. Boy, what a cast. There was you, there was Sean Connery, Sam Neill, James Earl Jones. What was it like making that movie?
Yeah. Well, I it was a special movie for me, and still is. I'm amazed the fact that it's still rerunning it. Every once in a while on television, but for different reasons. It was just a good quality movie. It was probably the last real Cold War movie where the Soviet Union were the bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
We got to shoot out on the USS Enterprise for a few days and flew out there, landed on it, stayed on it overnight, and did some work out there and got to meet our young people out there. As senator, I got to do that a lot, but that's the first time I'd ever done that, and it was important to me. And the quality of the movie, I was very pleased with. It was a story without a lot of gratuitous violence or bad language or sexual exploitation or anything like that. Just a good, solid story. It shows what a movie like that can accomplish if it's a good movie.
Absolutely. It sure does. Now, you're also best known for your acting role as Arthur Branch in Law & Order, who is the district attorney for the city of New York. And I have to ask you, how much of yourself was in the character of Arthur Branch?
Oh, quite a bit. Quite a bit. Of course, professionally, I'd been a prosecutor when I was a young man. I was a lawyer, and you know, sitting behind a desk telling people what to do kind of came naturally to me, but they had to clean up that southern part. You know, I didn't exactly have a New York accent,
mm-hmm.
but they had my character coming up from the south and so forth. So we worked that out. It was a really good gig for me. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Great people to work with, and you know, wound up tying the record for the longest-running dramatic series in the history of television.
Yeah, it's an amazing show, and I watch the reruns frequently on TV. We're talking to Fred Thompson, everybody, author of the new book, Teaching the Pig to Dance, a memoir of growing up and second chances. Fred, what did you get out of writing the book, Teaching the Pig to Dance?
Well, I got to revisit growing up. I got to think about some of those interesting characters and the funniest people that I'd ever met, not the least of which was my own father. And just a wonderful growing up period for a young boy in the history of our country, and we were coming out of being victorious internationally as a nation. We were building our country, and people had come off the farms like my parents to build a greater nation, and you didn't need much to get by. And if you're in a little small town like I was in, you had people there who were strong people in every sense of the word, and knew what you were doing, and made sure that you halfway behaved yourself. It was a special time in our country's history, and certainly it was a wonderful time in my life.
It absolutely was. It was probably the idyllic time in the United States history. It was great. Now, I'm going to change gears on you. You're a talker just like me. You have your own radio show. How do you see the state of talk radio, the talk radio industry in the United States today?
Well, it's evidently doing pretty well. Everybody I know has got a show. Just kidding. But I think especially being a political year, it's going to be good. People are concerned about their country and how things are going, and people who have views and experiences and those areas, I think you get a receptive audience to talk about that. I think conservative talk radio is done especially well for those reasons. People's concerns. So I think that part of talk radio is doing very, very good right now, and will continue to into the future.
Yeah. Now, you just mentioned conservative talk radio sort of dominates the AM airwaves. Why do you think it is that it's so strong, and why do you think progressive or liberal talk radio can't really find a foothold? I mean, Air America on XM Satellite just folded recently.
Yeah, they did. Well, I think a lot of it is that the dogs aren't eating their dog food. They're not giving them the product they want to listen to. I mean, middle class America out there is a pretty conservative group of folks. So many more people identify themselves as conservative than liberal. It can be just that simple. And then you've got to have a certain entertainment value too that you've got to be able to pull off. But it's really true. Conservative talk is prospered, and liberal talk is not.
Absolutely. Well, it has been a delight talking with you. This is Fred Thompson, everybody, author of the new book, Teaching the Pig to Dance. Thank you so much for being my special guest.
Good to be with you.
Thanks so much. Thank you.
Bye.
Take care.